Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 222. Science Faction, the March for Science.
The March for Science, yes, but it's also our creepiest episode because we're recording from the back of Bobby's van.
Those of you guys who don't know the story, I actually tried to be the kind of master of ceremonies, the MC, the host for the San Diego March for Science, and that was on track until I ran into apparently an arch enemy or a few arch enemies in the board of the March for Science, and I was essentially declared persona non grata, and I was not allowed to be a part of it.
Is it shocking? The man who tortures me every week on I Call BS has enemies in science.
You know what? They actually stated specifically that they thought I was being too easy on you in I Call BS, and that's why they didn't want me here. They called me a Damien apologizer, actually.
You're a humane dictator.
The head of the March for Science was actually on our side. He was trying to get me involved and trying to be able to get us to broadcast from the March for Science. We asked that as a concession. Well, if I can't be the MC, can we at least broadcast? They took a real quick vote, and except for the head of the March for Science, who was on our side, it was a unanimous no.
We have reason to believe this guy was a Russian agent working directly under orders from Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're us, and so we heard, no, you absolutely can't, you're not part of the March for Science, don't do it, and we decided, well, we'll just bring a van down and record in the parking lot of the March for Science, whether you like it or not. So we are here at the March for Science, we are right outside the setup booth and tables, we are making ourselves incredibly visible to all of the heads of the March for Science, so they know where we're here.
This is guerrilla podcasting.
Yeah, we're going to do some I Call BS with some random scientists walking around. We're going to go do some man on the street and talk to some people, and that'll be really fun. For anybody who doesn't know, this is the second annual March for Science. It's a national event all across the United States in which different cities participate to come out and show their support for science. Last year in the inaugural one, Science Faction went out. We got some pictures with some fans. We hung out. We did some man on the street bits then, too. And that was the first annual one that was 17,000 people. And as much as the March for Science apparently hates us, we still love the March for Science, so we're out here to support them.
Us? Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't let me in with you. They hate you. don't ruin my future with these wonderful scientists.
So we are down here at the Waterfront Park in downtown San Diego supporting the March for Science. Hopefully you're doing the same thing in your own city. And I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my van comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. I think it's really cool that we're recording from the back of your spy van, and I think it's also really cool that you have a spy van, but are the restraints necessary?
This is an ex-FBI surveillance van. Don't ask why I have it. It's for podcasting purposes.
No, but really, are the restraints necessary?
They're the only way I can contain you within the van, Damien. That's the way the science, March for Science, they said, okay, we're not going to let you come, but if you do come, you got to keep that Damien tied down like Hannibal Lecter. We're going without a specific scientist today, though we are going to go around and talk to a lot of different scientists, so you won't have a specific science guest host today, but you can go ahead and check out the bios for our different regular science guest hosts on our website, www.thesciencefaction.com, where we're just putting up our bios this week. So if you're interested in what their specialty is, what they study, where they work, go ahead and look at that, and you'll have little snippets about Dr. Ava and Bill and Dr. Allison Gill, and all of those people will have their own little bio up on the bios page of www.thesciencefaction.com. But we wanted to start off with our newest bit. Damien, you introduced a bit last week that is very interesting. It's the Ask Bobby an Ungoogleable Question. Could you please give the premise for that?
There are a lot of questions out there, a lot of unknowables that if you were to ask Google for help, it would be powerless to help you. Mm-hmm. What you need is a human brain that works in the absurd, a human brain that has mulled over every insane question over its autistic 34 years of life.
And is prepared with a FBI surveillance van to back those questions up with facts.
If you have that question, submit it to our segment, Bobby Answers an Ungoogleable Question, at Faction Science on Twitter.
All right, so this week's question, Damien, is a very interesting one. I like it because it's very specific. It is, we have just discovered time travel, but it is of a temporary wormhole, and it takes a tremendous amount of power to use. We have a short window to use it, so we have to use it now. It is a one-way trip we can do one time. We will never be able to recreate this time machine. We have a one-way ticket on an airplane. Now, you can go back to any point in human history, only backwards, not forwards. it's not an unlimited time machine. It can only take back so much. So you are limited to about the size of a 20-foot shipping container, or you kind of think of it like a small school bus. You are limited to that size thing. You can put in it whatever you want. However, this is not a
personnel.
Yes, you can equipment. Put people, equipment, seeds, whatever you want. This, however, is not some kind of big funded government study. This is almost like a secret time machine that only you know about. So assuming you can cash out your house or mortgage or whatever and get, you know, a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, how much money do we have to work with?
That kind of is like whatever you think you could get away with. You know, like if you sold everything you owned or you borrowed a bunch of
money.
Show
your privilege and say your number.
You know, you would think if you got everything and you convinced some people it was really important, maybe some six-figure numbers. But the idea is it's anything that you personally could get, not necessarily any technology we have. So you couldn't go back in time with a nuclear weapon because we personally couldn't get nuclear weapons. However, being Americans, we could go get AR-15. So you could take those back with you. You could take people back with you. You can take anything you can fit and feasibly acquire into a structure about the size of a small shipping container. You can go back to any point in human history, and your goal, you are tasked with this by the overlords of humanity, your goal is to make the world a better place. Where do you go back to, and what do you do to do so?
In an attempt to Kobayashi Maru this, could I argue that because I'm going back in time, it doesn't matter if I commit a crime. So, if I could physically produce a plan to steal a nuclear weapon and then immediately travel through time after I have stolen said nuclear weapon.
Now you suck at stealing nuclear weapons. You've tried it twice.
But I keep getting away with it.
Yeah.
I'm like the Hamburglar of stealing nuclear weapons.
You're like the Iranian Hamburglar. Yeah, so the,
rubble, rubble.
It's an interesting scenario, and I like the idea that you would be in a position where you would try and make the world a better place. What would you do to do so? Damien, I'd like you to start off. Tell us what your idea would be.
That's easy. Because you're confined, you've placed such a strict volume constraint on what I can take back.
Right.
I think my only choice is to send back a Terminator. A Terminator with the intent
you don't have a Terminator,
of
though.
Ruling...
You can't get a Terminator right now.
Well, I can't, but maybe my grandchildren could.
But they,
could
that
I
wouldn't matter. You only have
ability
no,
to them?
You only have now. Remember, it's a short window, this wormhole. You only have now to do it.
Like, I don't have a time to go to MIT, get a doctorate in robotics.
Nope.
I have nothing.
You have nothing like that.
Okay, well then I'm just going to have to get Arnold Schwarzenegger and send him back in time and just really hope that they get all the references.
And his
back.
Point, where is he going? What point in time?
He's going to...
He's going to 1992.
He's there to stop James Cameron from... he wants a more believable T-1000.
He's going to help Edward Furlong make better decisions with his life.
You're going to grow up and be way more awkward looking than you think. Nobody will buy that you're the leader of the human resistance.
Enjoy your time on this 100cc dirt bike.
You know, I'd like to send, like, the cure for smallpox back.
Okay.
But, I mean, how would I get that to the people? I have no means of distributing that. Whatever I would do, I'd send it back to Africa, dawn a civilization. But I feel like whatever I would
send
wouldn't
be enough.
Well,
dawn a civilization would be the Middle East.
Fine. Mesopotamia.
Okay.
I'll send it to Mesopotamia, but I don't know what I could do. Everything I could think of just seems like too little.
Yes, and so this is a big problem, is how do you make an effect that's long-lasting, that would affect the entire world? How would you do this? A lot of people, you know, give the immediate reaction, I'm going to go back and kill Hitler. All right, if you go back and kill Hitler, that's great, you know, you stop that, but you also still have a seething German population that is still really angry about the resolution of World War I, that is still in poverty, that is still likely to explode in some way or another, granted not nearly as bad. You also then affect things like you wouldn't have the creation of Israel. You would change a lot of other things as well. Some people have stated, you know, you go back and you stop the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, stopping World War I. That's a little bit more getting to the root of the problem, but again...
The old world never would have crumbled. We'd be living in a steampunk land right now.
In my mind, you still have the problem of these widespread disparate societies with differing values, differing technologies that kill each other all the time. You have diseases. You have a lot of things that are just undesirable in terms of having a unified population. So I came up with something that I think works out pretty well. Now, first, you got to say what you start with. I start with a old school short bus. Diesel, of course. And in the back, I'm going to bring with me the equipment by which I can turn plant matter into biodiesel type scenario. So we're going to be able to make vegetable oil and then use that vegetable oil to run that diesel so that once we get down there, we don't just run out of fuel. Secondarily, I'm going to have to bring some weapons, obviously. So I want some nice long-range sniper rifles and at least one or two guys who know how to use them. I'm going to need to bring with me, this is the easy one, you essentially download the internet, right? You want to get all the useful information off the internet, everything that's not Facebook. You get survival guides, you get science books, you get scientific papers, you download every book ever written, and you essentially can store that all on a tablet if you wanted, but you have a couple terabytes of data that you take with you in hard drives and whatnot. You could say you back it up.
Most
for
of that's
security
cat
reason.
Videos.
Yeah, though. Exactly, yeah. You back it up on solid state hard drives so that you have something that's somewhat permanent with you, and maybe even you bring with you the means to mill paper and printing press so that you can start slowly transferring those to a physical hard copy, though if you have enough solid state hard drives, you probably have enough backup for that to work.
So you're bringing the liberal media back with you.
Yep. So you have that, but obviously you're going to need to power that. So you're going to need a few solar cells, you're going to need some batteries, and you're going to need the means for continual production. So generators, windmills, that kind of thing. Again, all of these are small enough that especially taken apart and deconstructed will easily fit. You still have plenty of room. By the way, one of the things I would also bring is my powered paraglider, which is a small ultralight aircraft. Also breaks down into a very, very small package, but you could fly around and that would give you some kind of spiritual dominance and the ability to travel long distances very quickly in a place without roads because your bus can't go everywhere there. You're gonna want to bring some things like vaccines that you wouldn't be able to produce yourself in mass. But again, you can't bring enough for a billion people, so you have to bring enough for a few thousand at least. Then you're going to want to bring a linguist with you. I don't know about Dr. Ava. She's a little uppity. Maybe a different language. You're going to want to bring a linguist with you, and this person is going to help you communicate with who you go back in time with. Because remember, you go back even a thousand years, and even the people who speak quote-unquote English are speaking a language that you cannot understand.
I really hope Dr. Ava listens to this episode and hears you call her uppity. Your scenario is good. It sets things up for success. But I think that there's going to be this time where where they run out of vaccines and medical supplies, but they have all the knowledge. Like, yep, it's cancer. We can't do shit about it. But it's...
Well, and part of the way you need to jumpstart this is I'm also going to bring back essentially a huge store of different seed crops and the knowledge with which to farm them. Again, we've already downloaded all the books and the farming and whatnot. I'm going to bring at least a few agricultural farming experts and maybe a civil engineer that's going to help me as well. And we're going to bring back enough seed stock to then get a whole bunch of different domesticated crops going so that we can start civilizations, planters to get that kind of stuff rolling. And then where I'm going to go back to, and this is really the important part, what time do you go back and what do? I go back to something called the human genetic bottleneck that happened in Africa somewhere around 75 to 90,000 years ago, where essentially the entire population, or at least the entire population that still has descendants alive right now of human beings on Earth was only a few thousand people at most. I'm going to go back to that period of time and essentially round all those people up. Now, that's not going to be too hard because...
White guy goes back to Africa, yep. Dawn of civilization, rounds up a bunch of Africans.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, these would also be my ancestors by definition. So they're, I mean, it gets murky there.
So, oh my God, like if one of them falls in love with you and you have like a Marty McFly situation... You're my great.
Now, you would probably have to be violent to some extent because you're going to have to show that you're the one in charge. That's unfortunate because you probably won't be able to speak with them directly. Even if you brought back a linguist, they have no idea how to communicate. It's going to take them a while to get the lexicon out. So I would meet with the people. Hopefully my linguist would start working and with them and be able to quickly reach a peaceable solution and we could start exchanging information. But on the chance it wasn't, instead of a war, what I think I would do is call out single combat, i.e. Brad Pitt in Troy. Similar to that, what I would do is set up and go, okay, well, just so you know, I'm, and as much as I can express this using my linguist, I am kind of a supernatural being here. I have these abilities. You really should listen to me to prove it. Pick your best warrior and I'll take them out really easily. So they pick their best warrior. We stand in a big open area and I simply point at this warrior. And as I do so, my trained sniper, half a mile away, takes the shot, and all of a sudden his head explodes, and now I am the king of that area.
He's just showing off at a half a mile.
Yep. And once you get going, you can start establishing agriculture, you can start teaching, and all you have to do is get a few of the younger kids to start coming in to slowly learn your language, because kids learn it really quickly, and you're talking about a few years after which you have a pretty good translator system going back and forth. You expand that because, again, you only have to encompass a few thousand people. That is realistic. You could basically get to all of that 1,000 people. And you create a world society in which you emphasize pacifism, you emphasize knowledge, the pursuit of technology and innovation, no harm to other human beings, a respect for nature, maybe a curbing on how many kids you have too. So even though there's only 1,000 of us, we're only going to have, you know, a few more than 2 kids so that we don't expand our population too fast and we don't eat up our resources. And because we get this jump start of getting to start essentially with 21st century technology, now we get farming and technology and all this stuff that we can slowly morph into this new modern society. There essentially aren't these people who are on the outskirts. Everybody's inside of this group. There are no outsiders. And because of that, we are able to kind of create a society from the ground up, which does not necessarily war or fight, and in which there's plenty so that there is not a shortage of resources that cause people to fight.
Wouldn't your solution also create a Planet of the Apes-like situation, because we'd have so many other hominid cousins?
That is true.
That we did not exterminate.
Yes. So we would still have to do with, at that point, the Denisovans, the Neanderthals, some Floresiensis, and maybe some other remnant things. So here is the downside. We're probably going to wipe them out or interbreed with them, one or the other. But either way, everybody's got to be in. Like, it's got to be one of those things that everybody accepts being in this new society. Otherwise, ironically enough, in order to make this pacifism work, you're going to have to kill a lot of people.
Yeah, the old guard has to die.
But if you could do that, you would jumpstart humanity to the point where we're already aware of things like climate change, carbon emissions, overpopulation, shortage of resources. And you start from that point, you can manage that population from such a point that you don't grow out of control. I mean, this world could support millions and millions of people living incredibly luxurious, very, very safe lives. Problem is, we have billions of people, and so the resources aren't there. And then you have fighting over food and water and access to all those things. So hopefully the idea would be everybody would live in a society, and this would take a few generations, in which they would reach some kind of utopia. Now, here is the hard part, and here's the one thing I would bring back that I know is possible, but it would take some work and preparation, which is you're going to need to create some kind of artificial intelligence. You could base it off... You could base it off Alexa. Like, it doesn't have to be that advanced, because it's going to have access to all the information you have. And you're going to have to program it after a while to be able to give the answers you would give if you were there after you're gone, because your lifespan doesn't increase. You're still only alive for that 70, 80 years. You're going to have to give it the ability to give you medical knowledge to guide the society. And this would be like the all-knowing orb that this priest come to be like, all right, what do we do? Bill ended up stabbing Jim because there was a fight over an ox. Now what do we do?
But I mean, don't you hit a wall at some point when you need 3 backup Lexas and somebody who knows to plug in the new Lexa?
Yeah, I mean, you are going to have to keep a continuation of knowledge that especially the new kids. I mean, once you get a few of the kids from these areas and start raising them up and they speak your language and they understand the technology, you could do it. Now, one of the interesting parts of this is you almost have to have a dual-sidedness. When you go back in time initially, you almost have to present yourself as a god, as a supernatural being, because they're not going to understand anything else. However, that first generation of kids growing up, it is necessary for them to understand the man behind the screen, because they have to be the man behind the screen later. They have to understand the technology. So you almost have a break where you come back and you're like, look at this lighter, I'm a god. And then after that, you're explaining, you know, the physics of flint and gas emissions.
Wait a second, he's not a god. He's a really awkward white dude. Let's beat his ass.
Yeah, the white part would probably help out, right? Because it would look really exotic to them.
I don't know. He seems like he could be a cop. I don't know. It's weird.
I don't trust this cop. But anyway, that was mine. Where do you go back in time? You go back to the human genetic bottleneck 95,000 years ago in East Africa. What do you bring with you along with arms and the ability to produce fuel? You bring back essentially the entire knowledge of humanity, ultralight aircraft.
Some machining equipment.
Machining equipment would obviously be necessary. You need medical knowledge, including drugs and vaccines, antibiotics, and a few other things like that. A whole bunch of seeds and a few people that are in key positions to help you create this new society, especially linguists and farmers and at least one guy who's pretty decent with a 30-06.
Yeah. Like, we need some, like, a really traumatized veteran. Like,
yeah.
But also, like, one who won't try to take over the mission at some point.
Right. Well, and then here's the thing. When you're selecting these people, it has to be like an NBC sitcom. Diversity matters, because you want as much genetic diversity in this group going back as possible. You want the Asian computer specialist.
The Eskimo lesbian.
Yeah.
Special
forces. Well, actually, you wouldn't want her to be a lesbian. That's going to be not be good for the genetic diversity.
She understands she has to take one for the team.
Literally. All right. So anyway, please send in your next ungoogleable question to us at Faction Science. Be as specific as possible, even if it takes multiple tweets. If you do not fill in the specifics, Damien will fill them in for you, and you don't want anything in Damien's hands.
I'll spit in my hand first.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Can't believe Richard Dawkins agreed years ago to do the intro to Science Articles.
Yeah, it still hits me every time. We're going to just do one article so we have time to go out and talk to some scientists after this. Very interesting article. You'll see why I picked it, maybe. Very interesting article came out of Australian National University. What makes someone believe or reject science? The quality of the audio recordings.
Okay, so basically the band playing in the background.
Right, the band.
Of the show.
If you guys can hear right now, the band is playing for the March for Science, so you might get some hits over. Don't let that make you think we don't know what we're talking about.
There are a couple of people like, I don't know. If they were smarter, they'd have parked farther away from the band.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting study in which they look at how people judge the reliability of scientists' work, how verifiable it is, all that kind of stuff. And the way they do it is really interesting. They have scientists delivering talks at conferences, and they take two different recordings. One is like a decent recording, and the other is kind of a shitty one. And they have people listen to it, and these groups consistently rate the reliability of what they're saying, whether or not they know what they're doing. They consistently rate it, not based on the information presented, but the quality of the audio recording.
Hipsters believe it more if it's on vinyl.
That's, yeah. Just yeah, and if nobody else knows about it yet.
It's more convincing and warm.
Yeah. They also believe it more if the guy presenting has a beard. So what's really interesting about this is we had some really bad audio quality for quite some time. It took us a while to get our shit together and figure out how to do a halfway decent podcast. But when you listen to other podcasts, I'm a huge podcast fan, you listen to something like Radiolab, it seems good because the audio quality is so good. And it gives it some kind of validity. Whereas
it's edited super well.
Yeah, it's edited well. Everything kind of flows together. Then you listen to some shitty recording, and sometimes it's of a brilliant professor giving a talk, and it seems like they just don't have their shit together as much because, you know, you have a hiss in the background and there's a pop and you hear four doors close. It makes it seem like it's somewhat unprofessional, and that translates to your feeling of the validity of their statements.
Yeah, I listened to the James Watson podcast. I'm like, a lot of these guys, this guy's ideas are really good, but just the recording quality is terrible.
It's an interesting conundrum because most scientists are not audio specialists. And if they want to record their product and send it out, it's weird to think that they're going to be judged less on the quality of the content and more on the quality of the audio, but that's a fact that you have to deal with. So what do? You have to figure out how to record good audio if you want to present things to the general public. And like we talked about a week ago, you also have to present it in an interesting way, because things like surprise, innovation, humor all affect whether or not somebody remembers what you're saying, how important it is, and whether or not it can change their mind. So you mix those two things together and you take our kick-ass sound quality and our awesome dick jokes, Damien, and we're doing better work than Hawking ever did.
I completely agree. Furthermore, for our fans, just so you guys know, every episode, no matter how good it is, Bobby has cut out a lot of crap.
A lot of crap.
Like, a lot of crap has hit the cutting room floor.
Right.
Bobby's countless
You wouldn't
hours,
believe how many times a scientist drops an N-bomb.
You know, Bobby puts in a ton of hours to make the show sound, and all both of us sound as, and be hopefully as funny as
right.
You guys know we fucking are.
Right. And again, scientists love that N-word. I don't know why.
He cuts out a ton of N-words at the March for Science every year.
Yeah, this is the hardest one because you gotta deal with the background noise, hard to make a smooth edit. It's a big problem. I think these things are really interesting because intrinsically, I feel like I kind of know this just based on my own podcast experience. But you tell this to any scientist and they will huffaw at you as like, what are you talking? I am presenting work that I did at Harvard after 35 years of study. It's been peer reviewed. It's highly accurate. What are you talking about? Well, it turns out you used a shitty Shure mic that you found on like the conference room floor and you recorded in mono instead of stereo, and no one's going to believe what you fucking say.
Look, to put it in language you can understand, you decided to turn a research paper in MLA format. And you just expect people like the fucking community to just understand that. You need to understand the medium in which you're turning in the assignment. What is expected?
I think it's really important to kind of get this kind of stuff out to the general public because it also helps you recognize your bias. You have a bias towards things that sound good, that sound well produced, that sound kind of polished and stuff. That doesn't mean that thing is true. Listen to us. We put a bunch of bullshit out there without any care about the validity of it, yet it sounds halfway decent. And then you have...
I care.
Yeah.
I try to be accurate with everything I say.
Yeah, sure you do, Davey. And then you have that audio those audio lecture series of very famous professors stumbling and doing a lot of ums and ahs and kind of boring, but they're presenting really important, well-thought-out evidence, and yet it doesn't seem nearly as valid. And so you should consider that when you're listening to things. Why am I accepting or not accepting what this person is saying? Does it have to do with the actual content of the information provided, the research, the peer review, or does it have to do with whether or not there's some sweet sound effects in the beginning with Richard Dawkins' voice?
While it may be not popular with individual scientists, do you think it would be better for the science community if, for example, if a scientist had to give a speech, they hired an attractive actor to deliver that speech?
I actually do think something like that would work better. You hire somebody who presents your information in a better way that makes people more interested in it. I don't know.
Like you maybe have somebody with a gravelly voice read a podcast announcement or something.
Well, or you have an important thing to get out. You don't necessarily have the scientists themselves doing that press release. You have somebody else do it. And then, you know, anybody has questions, that guy can answer them. But the person presenting it doesn't have to be the guy doing the research. There's a little bit of ego to it where we want to present our own paper and our own work, and we put all the effort into it, and so we want to do it. But if it's not going to be effectively communicated, hire the hot chick with the marketing degree. Mm-hmm. Get her in there, get her to say your things, and then if somebody has a question about how it works processing ATP, you can stand up and answer it.
I think if we can incentivize famous actors like John Hamm to do this as a tax, you incentivize their taxes, I think the scientists would be so starstruck to meet John Hamm that they probably wouldn't voice any complaints at the time.
They would immediately accept whatever he's saying.
And then as he like smiled and slapped him on the ass, like James Watson loved it when John Hamm slapped him on the ass.
First of all, everything always goes to your John Hamm fantasies every time we get back around to it. Very interesting stuff, and I think it should change the way we present scientific evidence, especially if you want your evidence to be both accepted and understood. And then if you pair that, like I said, with that story we covered a few weeks ago of using humor, surprise, that kind of thing to spice up your information, make it more palatable, make it more interesting, make it more memorable, and more importantly, make it better able to change somebody's opinion, change their mind.
I'm just putting it out there. Perhaps if there's any people in academia listening right now, if you have a paper you'd like Bobby and I to punch up, we would more than happily.
Well, we present every week, right? Present a bunch of papers on science faction. Maybe you want your paper to get some notoriety. You let us know. Maybe, I don't know, slide a few dollar bills underneath the table and we'll make this thing popular.
We're trying to be a credible science journal here on Science Faction.
The next publication has Damien's name in the author position, then crossed out, says anonymous, and it's a study on John Hamm touching your ass.
Wakefield loved it.
All right, so what we're going to do is go around and play I Call BS with some random scientists that we find out at the March for Science. So without any further ado, let's move right on to I Call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
We're here at the March for Science 2018 in San Diego. We have a very interesting guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Margot Wall, and I am the creator of the podcast Rad Scientist, KPBS podcast.
Very, very cool. Much more legitimate, obviously. You got KPBS on your side. They won't take our dick jokes, but we're very happy to have you here. You have actually agreed to play I Call BS against Damien. Is that correct?
I don't know what it is, but I've agreed to it anyways.
Fantastic. Well, I Call BS, the game where I read four science news articles, and my panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS. Standing for bad science. You think you're ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay, there are no rules as to how many of these can or cannot be science. So any of them, they can be all be true, all be false, or some mixture of the two. All right, so Damien, 70 million years ago, before the dinos went extinct, large crustaceans known as ostracods died out because of the size of their genitals. True or false?
This is bad science. Because if large genitals had been weeded out of the genetic population, how am I alive right now?
Yeah. All right. So that's what we call a compensation podcast. All right. What do you think?
What do I think? I mean, listen, I could see that happening. I could see the sexual evolution kind of overcoming the need to survive. I mean, you see birds, they have really bright plumage, even though maybe something's going to hunt them, but they really need to attract their sexual partner. And, you know, I could see this being true.
All right. Article number two, a mohawked turtle that breathes with its anus is officially on the endangered species list. Damien, is this science or bad science?
It's hard to believe something so awesome has found its way onto the endangered species list.
But I imagine there's probably a thriving exotic animal trade with this kick-ass turtle. So I'm going to say this is science.
I just want to, I feel like breathing through the anus, wouldn't you just call it then like a nose? You know what I mean? It's like that kind of thing. Like,
I mean, your anus could still be your anus. See, just because you breathe through it doesn't make it your nose, right?
I just feel like it does.
Okay.
But it could be both. I'm just saying, like, you could say it poops through its nose, and that would be just as valid.
What a cruel joke of nature to poop out of your nose.
Yeah. And I think, like, the nose has nasal cavities. It goes to the olfactory. It's got more than just, like, that going for it, you know? So I feel like they're separate, even if the same similar thing happens.
So it also has a nose.
Right, yeah.
It just can also breathe through its anus.
Right.
I think it could be possible, but the mohawk is getting me. Okay. I just think turtles aren't that cool.
Okay, yeah. They're really more of a Jerry Curl type animal.
Yeah.
All right.
Do they know ninjutsu or anything? Is this like a spinoff? Are you doing a fucking comic book?
Yeah, it is. April O'Neil is much hotter in this one. Okay, article number 3. A 1,400-year-old skeleton has been found in southern Europe with a golden hand like that of Jaime Lannister. Damien, is this science or bad science?
Was it found in a loving embrace of its sister, like, and a very evil boy child?
Yeah, or pushing a little child out a window.
Or Raven.
Yeah.
I don't know. Insert your goddamn Game of Thrones reference there. Science.
So they just found a golden hand, you're saying?
Well, on the skeleton.
On the
skeleton. Like a prosthetic.
Wow, totally gold. That must have been, like, a baller
That'd be
guy.
A pretty. That would be a baller guy, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't have a hand. I'm not going to make it out of wood. I'm not going to make it out of...
You also have to consider the hygiene at the time. They used their hands instead of toilet paper. That would be the most expensive toilet paper.
Yeah, it would. You know, it actually is pretty good at, how silver is,
sure.
is pretty good at... I mean, I think gold is just as well, like, as being an antibiotic. It's mm-hmm. just that gold's more expensive. People
right.
want to use it. Silver spoon. I think it's true.
It is much easier to get feces off of gold than it is out from under your fingernails. Trust me.
All right, and lastly, a new nasal spray tested on mice seems to be able to eliminate peanut allergies with a single dose. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, but vaccinating yourself from peanuts also causes autism.
Oh, goddammit. All right. Please don't pay attention to his anti-science views. We just have him on for his ha-ha, yuck-yuck funnies.
Listen,
you could do better.
I think it's science. I think it is. And it's exciting because everyone should know the joys of peanut butter, specifically
right.
the crunchy kind, spread over a piece of toast with sliced bananas and a little bit of cinnamon.
Oddly detailed. You got into food porn there. All right. Let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number 1. 70 million years ago, before the dinos went extinct, large crustaceans known as ostracods died out because of the size of their genitals. Damien thinks this is false. Margo thinks this is true. And this one is science. Congratulations, Margo.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed. Very interesting paleontological work looked at the correlation between the increasing size of the ostracod's genitals, which got massively big, and their rate of extinction. And they found out that the larger, out of hand, largely due to probably sexual selection, genitals led to a much higher tenfold extinction level with those particular crustaceans.
Can you use a human comparison to help the audience? To help paint a picture for the audience?
Yeah, it would be like if there were no more Ron Jeremy's. That's essentially what happened to this group. All right, article number 2. A mohawk turtle that breathed with its anus is officially on the endangered species list. Damien thought this was true. Margo thought this one was false. And this one is science. It is the Mary River turtle. It grows these plants on its head that actually look like a mohawk. It's really neat. Go ahead and check out our website, www.thesciencefaction.com, for a picture of what this animal looks like. It looks awesome. And it happens to basically constantly run water over its cloaca, where it can extract oxygen and actually breathes through what is essentially its own anus.
Point of order, is a cloaca an anus?
It is in this case, and you're not allowed to bring points of order. Article number 3. A 1,400-year-old skeleton has been found in southern Europe with a golden hand like that of Jaime Lannister. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is bad science. It was actually found, that 1,400-year-old skeleton was found with a knife hand as a prosthetic, much more like Merle from Walking Dead.
So much cooler.
This particular skeleton was found in southern Europe from the Longobard culture, which is actually a migratory culture from central Germany. And the skeleton was buried with a knife prosthetic hand, which had to be, you know, it's either The Walking Dead or 300, that weird Persian thing that they had, the fat guy with the sword arm.
Is it possible he was killed by a guy with a gun hand?
You don't bring a knife hand to a gun hand fight.
Listen, if I had my druthers, I'd have a spork hand. It's really handy.
And lastly, article number 4, a new nasal spray tested on mice seems to be able to eliminate peanut allergies with a single dose. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. And by the way, that makes it a tie, and the science faction rule for I Call BS is the tie always goes to the scientist. Congratulations, Margo, our guest scientist!
Oh yeah!
For dominating I Call BS, just raking Damien over the coals, totally demolishing him. It is almost second nature to you to get beaten in this game, is it not, Damien?
It's usually I'm upset when I compete in this rigged game, and the scientist takes it because of some technicality, but it has been an honor to compete against you, Margo, and it is an honor to die by your sword. I would gladly do it again.
Yes, by my sword hand.
Indeed, in this mouse model study, a new type of nasal spray that attacks different receptors and have previously been targeted by these attempted vaccines seems to relieve the peanut allergy symptoms for 2 weeks after the injection, which would be equivalent of much longer time in humans. It may even be permanent. We're not sure until follow-up studies come out, but it seems to have long-lasting effects longer than any previous vaccination attempt for this type of allergies. This may mean that pretty soon we won't have a bunch of little kids who can't have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Like you said, Margo, congratulations for coming in and storming I Call BS on your first shot.
So what do I win?
You won the honor of beating an illiterate man in something.
I'll take it. I'll take it. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right. What a fun 2018 March for Science. We're here even though they told us not to be. We are guerrilla recording because Science Faction is here to present all the information in good quality audio with funny dick jokes to help you remember it. That's the way real science education is done. Screw you, American university system.
If you were at the San Diego March for Science and you were wondering if you saw us, just remember, did you see two super cool guys with leather jackets smoking cigarettes being rebels the whole time? Because if so, that was me and my boy Bobby.
And if you didn't make it out this year, hopefully we can see you out here next year, where we'll be, again, whether they want us here or not, in the 2019 March for Science. Well, thanks so much for coming out and joining us at the San Diego March for Science. We're going to have a regular episode for you next week, so come on back for Science Faction 223.
Well, the March for Science has officially added Science Faction to the list of banned things for 2019. The list already included drugs, alcohol, and people who got laid before the age of 21.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.